Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Get your dream business up and running or take control of your family's future with LegalZoom. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 363, recorded on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards. And welcome back, Mr. Howell.
Thank you. It was 2 weeks away, long enough to forget that Android news actually happens. But then I come back and there's not a whole lot of Android news to talk about.
I was just going to say, you didn't miss a whole lot. unfortunately, even the only news we had while you were gone wasn't really about Android, but it was about Facebook. But
yeah, there was a little bit of an Android hook there. But
a little bit. We found it. We did find it. But 2 weeks ago was, that one was rough. But yeah. Flo and I, we survived without you, but you were greatly missed. And now, of course, we traded Flo for Jason. Jason is back and Flo is gone. But that's okay because we have a great guest this week, right?
That's right. We're missing Flo today, but in Flo's place, we have the return, the triumphant return of Juan Bagnell. You may know him from all over the internet, but of course, Pocket Now, Some Gadget Guy. You've got your own podcast that we're going to be talking about a little bit later.
Yeah.
Explain your the personal podcast that you're doing around technology.
Yeah, SGGQA is really just a little home for very casual conversations. And one of the things that I'm making a bigger push towards are interviews. So the kickoff, sort of the grand return, was sitting down with a doctor to talk about hearing loss and smartphone use, something we'll be discussing in a little bit more detail later on in this show. And then I also really want to start pinning down some of my favorite content creators. Not necessarily to go through you guys are doing a great job covering news and stuff. I kind of want to start expanding the conversation on how we all got here. Mm-hmm. I feel like everybody has such a unique story, and the market has never been better for creating your own content. But I feel that there's a lot that we could be sharing as sort of educational value. And so SGGQA is one part answering viewer questions and listener mailbag stuff and tips and tricks and pro tips and help and how to. But on the other hand, also at least just different perspectives on how we all approach this conversation.
Awesome. You can go to somegadgetguy.com to find all of those episodes at this point. But like Juan said, we're going to be talking a little bit about one of those episodes. It's a very interesting topic. It's close to my heart. And I think we could all learn a little something about our hearing. But we'll talk about that in a few. We're going to also be discussing the possible arrival of mid-range Pixel devices. I've been using the Galaxy S9, at least for a lot of my vacation. I was using the Galaxy S9. I've got some thoughts that I'll share with you on that. We've also got the Echo Box digital audio player. Actually, Juan, you have a few hardware things that you've been playing around with that you're going to give us your thoughts on. The Go Mic Mobile's another one of those.
I'm so stoked you guys are bringing me on for more audio stuff. Like after talking about DACs and headphones last time, I was like, they're going to let me come back. I get to geek out about audio kit again. This makes me very happy.
Absolutely. I love the perspective, and I'm a big fan of audio stuff too. So it's perfect. Also, we've got a bunch of your emails because we haven't had a whole lot of time to fit in the emails. So I went through basically the last 3 weeks worth of emails, and there were a lot of really great ones in there. So we've got a bunch of those in today's episode, and of course some apps to review a little bit later. But first, I don't want to deprive. Victor is not here today, by the way. Victor is out. He's sick. He's not feeling well. So we wish that he will get better soon, and we miss him. But in his place, we have the return of Mac and Josh, who I should say to Mac and Josh, it's time for the news, Josh.
I'm pretty stoked that I'll be able to blame my hearing loss on something other than old age. It's Android news.
And how long did that take you to come up with?
Oh, it took all day.
Yeah.
Excruciating.
I know how you do it, Josh.
My heart's pounding like crazy too. I gotta come down from this
because it took me a minute to like tease that you were coming on. You had all that time to anticipate it.
You're like, oh, I did. It was the worst. Don't ever do that again.
All right. I'll remember to do that again.
The anticipation.
Google is narrowing in on India if a number of clues are to be believed. And I think at this point it's almost certain. I'm guessing you might hear more about this at Google I/O next month, or perhaps even in just a couple of days. But let's see here. First, a mid-tier Pixel type device. And this is going to be releasing to the Indian market, possible launch time of July or August. This wouldn't be the first go for Google entering the Indian market with some devices. We've seen Android One devices, Android Go devices have launched there before. But this would be the first one that would be marketed as direct from Google in the Pixel family. It would also be, obviously, the first mid-range Pixel device. And I'm guessing it wouldn't be exclusive to just that one market, that it would open up and expand out into other places. Is there a place in this world for a mid-range Pixel device? What do you guys think?
No, I definitely think that this is a huge opportunity in a world of high-end flagship gear cresting into that $1,000 territory. It's a debate topic that I actually want to see, have some structure on. Are people starting to overbuy with their phones, especially with the numerous options in that? What's hilarious, what used to be a high-end device was like in that $400 to $600 territory, mm-hmm. and now that's mid-range. Yep. Having some solutions, especially for emerging LTE markets, is obviously a smart business move, but I think there's a market for it here. And if you have the right branding behind it, then I think that's a move that Google could make very aggressive, very direct to consumers, and they have no shortage of manufacturing partners to work with. Even look at like a Moto X series. You know, they already have that as like a Project Fi solution. It wouldn't take much to brand that and tinker with it to fit into the Pixel ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I think it gets even more interesting when you think about their new strategic investment partners at HTC.
Yeah. What a coincidence. That timing seems to work perfectly.
let's not forget that Google added hundreds of engineers and a complete manufacturing supply chain. Mm-hmm. By strategically investing in HTC and keeping them alive. And we've been scratching our heads wondering what direction that will go in. This could be that direction. Jason, I've been screaming since the Pixel 1 that they need a mid-range Pixel. Like, mm-hmm. We talked about how Google struggles, getting their hardware out into the masses. I think they've done a great job with the Pixel and even a better job with the Pixel 2. I'm seeing that, on the street here in New York. My coworkers have it who aren't even people like us. It's definitely getting out there. But the need for a mid-range device, I think, is key. And then we all know how interested Sundar is, as well as Google in general, about emerging markets. So and the developing markets. So this checks off a lot of the bingo for Google hardware announcements, for me at least.
Yeah.
And this totally runs into my hypothesis with any new brand, that consumers don't really start taking it seriously until around generation 3. And having a portfolio of devices into the third iteration of the Pixel, I think would go a long way for that consumer mindshare.
On the Apple side of things, was the kind of lower the lower end entry? It was the iPhone C. So would it be the Pixel C? Oh wait, no, that's not going to work.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to work.
you've been sitting on that one for a while.
Yeah, what's the statute of limitations on those names? Huh? Like how long ago?
That's true. A little confusing though. I think we're still too soon to the Pixel C for that to work. Hopefully we'll see that in other markets. Second. In Google's, kind of plan here that seems to be unfolding in front of us of kind of reinvigorating its intentions in India. Clues are pointing to the Google Home and the Google Home Mini finally coming to the Indian markets. And actually a fan of the show, Vikram Mohan, who's also a podcaster at TalkingStuff.net, he wrote in about this. So that was when I first heard about this, and then I started to see a bunch of articles about it. But he said, today we had two of the biggest Indian music services, and I know I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, but Saavn, S-A-A-V-N, and then another service, Gaana, being made available on the Google Home, as well as an English India language option. So there's the groundwork is being laid for perhaps a Google Home to be released in the Indian market. Plans apparently Google has plans to price match the Amazon Echo devices that are already available in that market. So there's already a competitive market going on there once this launches. And Google has said in recent past that the Home would arrive there sometime soon. So could happen at I.O., could also actually and probably more likely happen April 10th. That's next Tuesday, because apparently Google India sent out a save the date for April 10th saying, quote, it's bound to keep you talking for a long time.
Well, that's obvious then. Yeah, so there
little,
we go.
A little on the nose.
Wait, a spoiler warning. Jeez. That's too funny. I mean, Jason, I enjoyed your discovery of Indian news coverage on Twitter today as you were talking about confirmed rumors in headlines.
Yes. Oh, man, I forgot about that. Yes. That was what was that tweet? I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it cracks me up when publications will, it's confirmed, quote, this may happen. It's just like, wait a minute, that's like the opposite of confirmed.
Yeah, here we go, I found it. It says, yeah, the headline is, it's confirmed. Here we go. Josh, I'm giving you the link in our chat so we can read it with everyone. It's confirmed. Google Home Mini speakers may come to India this month.
Oh, it's confirmed. You don't have to write about it anymore. It's done deal. It may happen.
Yeah. It is definitely a possibility worth examining the potential of observing the likelihood of this event eventually arriving.
Yes.
True story. Heard it here first.
It is absolutely true that it is possible. Well, guaranteed that it's possible.
That's a good segue to talk about a confirmation we did get, right, Jason?
That's right.
So it is confirmed that the OnePlus 6 is going to challenge the Galaxy S9 on speed. That's according to CNET, our friends over at CNET. So basically, OnePlus is out doing the rounds on PR, which we know they're marketing geniuses, and they're teasing out the features of their upcoming OnePlus 6 and comparing it to the Samsung 9, which is a big bar to measure against. The OnePlus 6 is going to be running the Snapdragon 845, which is the same as the Galaxy S9, but with up to 8 gig of RAM and 256 gig of storage. And of course, if you're keeping score at home, it will indeed have a notch. Okay. So the notch or no notch phones, OnePlus is in the notch camp. And in fact, so much so that Carl Pei, the head of OnePlus, said on Twitter, quote, learn to love the notch.
Okay.
And so quickly deleted that tweet after the backlash.
Exactly. And so then we reset the OnePlus how many days since the marketing screw up? There have been 0 days since the marketing screw up. The OnePlus 6 is going to have a bigger 6.2-inch screen, and it's looking like it's most likely going to be the most expensive OnePlus device to date, which I find a real bummer, because one of the things I liked about OnePlus was that they're providing flagship quality at an affordable price. And if we're inching closer to adopting the the $800 to $1,000 price range on a flagship, to see OnePlus following that lead is kind of disappointing for me. But that said, it seems like this phone's going to be a beast. Juan, what do you think of this one? Do you think it's going to be worth the money?
Well, again, worth itness is always going to be a really tricky discussion to unravel. It's whether or not they can make this pivot. A lot of enthusiast brands have to wrestle with this notion of courting enthusiasts and then realizing there aren't that many of us. So you have to find some way of translating that brand to something a little bit more mass market. And very few companies do that gracefully. OnePlus is an interesting entry into that discussion, because I think they've done a really good job of building a passionate fan base, but they've built a passionate fan base off of almost no profit margin on their devices. I'm not entirely surprised that we'd be seeing some news that whatever OnePlus phone's coming out will, rival the Galaxy, what fors, the speeds and the quickness, because, Samsung runs a lot of custom software on top of Android. It's always been a minor performance hit. So if you're going benchmark to benchmark or general UI to general UI, typically a OnePlus does usually feel a touch snappier. There's just less stuff going on. I mean, if you look at the number of services that Samsung has to include on a Note, for example, the Note's the biggest, beefiest beast of a phone that they've got, but you have to have a lot of stuff running for that S Pen to consistently, constantly be recognized whenever you need it. It's not like you turn it on and then turn it off manually. So I'm not terribly surprised there, but we'll have to see if this company can get ahead of its messaging, it's kind of okay when they have problems talking to enthusiasts. You know, like, they can be honest with us. They can be forthright with us. They can try and dance around us. But when you start expanding into that general consumer sphere, a few of these missteps that we've weathered, you know, like, you know, credit card problems or whether or not personal information is being trafficked on Chinese servers, these types of things get blown up in general media in a way that I don't know that they've got the talent or the tap dancing skills to get around those conversations.
Do you guys think OnePlus is still firmly an enthusiast brand? I mean, they've had a lot of iterations now. Every iteration is more expensive than the previous one. So it's no longer the, well, I mean, it's still great value for the price. Their phones still pack a really great value comparatively, but it's no longer, you know, kind of like the Nexus world that we were a couple of years ago, where it's like really ridiculously low price for a lot for the money compared to the competition. They're now kind of toe to toe with a lot of the brands that are producing similar hardware in the price category. But they're holding their own. But are they still enthusiast brand? I would say that they probably still are. How do they break out of that if they still are?
Well, I think it's this year is a hard shift away from enthusiasts. That's what I'm actually surprised by, is that we didn't see this lobster pot up to premium flagship price territory. It's almost like they're ripping the Band-Aid off in one revision. And that's what I think is so shocking to a number of people that have been on the OnePlus bandwagon, is that feels like a very distinct push. They're pushing away from this previous brand identity, and that's a lot of gray area space for them to be. That's a tough transition to manage.
Right.
I think the OnePlus move from enthusiast brand really needs carrier integration.
Yes.
Until you see T-Mobile or AT&T or Sprint promoting the OnePlus 6, you know, 6 Plus or the OnePlus 6 or whatever it might be, or 7 or 8, it won't break into non-enthusiast, because I mean, literally, like, I'll do it. We can put a note and do it next week. I will ask every person I know between now and next Tuesday, have you ever heard of a OnePlus phone, and keep track of the answers. And that will be our gauge whether it's enthusiast or not, because I'm pretty sure that the number that say yes will be very small.
Yeah.
Now to that point, I really feel that moving up the food chain in terms of price this aggressively is likely a move towards trying to court a carrier. When you're talking about profit margins, when you're talking about overhead, when you're talking about branding and advertising, you've got to start building all of those costs into the phone. And a T-Mobile isn't going to want to put a display up on a smartphone that no one's ever heard of, that doesn't look like it's priced correctly against a flagship phone. I think Google made the right move in going upscale. There isn't really a lot that changes from a Nexus to the first Google, to the first Pixel. But you put that higher price tag on, and now I think consumers, not necessarily enthusiasts, but consumers are more likely to say, oh, that's a Google iPhone, and it's not a cheap phone, so it's probably just as good as an iPhone.
Yeah.
I think OnePlus managing that, a similar transition, I think they're learning a few of not the always the most right lessons from watching Google do the same thing. But, you know, watching that unfold and watching how successful that was for the Pixel, I think is probably a step towards them trying to court some kind of carrier space here in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, and
that's what's got to happen. I think that's absolutely what's got to happen for it to break out.
That's what's got to happen, but will it? Because CompTIA points out in the chat room, see what happened to Huawei. Will carriers offer the OnePlus 6, you know, or whatever OnePlus device?
Can I put my tinfoil hat on?
Yeah.
Can I wear a tinfoil hat for just a minute?
Would love that. There's probably tinfoil underneath your hat. We just can't see it, right?
Well, that's why I never take it off, because okay. I need that shielding. And you guys have touched on this topic too. I mean, we saw the fallout from Huawei. Kind of wasn't the best look for this company. At the same time, they were monkeying around with Best Buy's review system. But we've seen Chinese manufacturers have issues with consumer data. We've not seen those companies ever face the same kind of law enforcement advisory that Huawei and ZTE are going through.
Yep.
And what the only commonality, until law enforcement agencies actually present us with evidence, Because I haven't even seen, you know, like people trying to hack these devices to see if there's any kind of backdoor that's of more significant consumer risk than what we all sort of naturally have through just various security holes. The commonality is that ZTE and Huawei deal with infrastructure as well as consumer devices. We had a data breach for payment processing and the potential for consumer identifiable information being hosted on a Chinese cloud server from OnePlus. Where was the law enforcement advisory there? We didn't see anything significant. And I would say OnePlus is as competitive a brand in North America as Honor or Huawei. So for me, this really does feel like government action trying to, I want to be careful here, but trying to manipulate the conversation around what the future of 5G infrastructure is going to be. And that's also having an impact on consumer-facing devices as well.
Yeah, and I think that ends up being, at least from the government, the U.S. government's perspective, that ends up being the difference, right? Huawei and ZTE are smartphone companies, but they're also networking companies, and they provide equipment that the U.S. government, you know, could potentially employ in its own systems that they are saying would make their systems insecure. And OnePlus is just a phone company. That's like all that OnePlus really does right
NBD.
Now.
NBD.
Good conversation. You can remove the tinfoil hat now or leave it on. Thank it's you. Actually a lot fun.
It's actually a little warm in here, so I'm
actually you might need your tinfoil hat for this. Or I'm very curious to hear about this. So we were talking a little bit earlier about your podcast and about the fact that you interviewed an audiologist, Allison Grimes, audiologist for UCLA, on your podcast, specifically about kind of the fact that we all have smartphones. We live in an age where everybody's using their smartphones to listen to things all the time, direct into their ear holes. And what is that doing to our hearing? Like, are we exposed to more hearing loss risk now that we're carrying around all these smartphones? It's a fascinating question and deep dive. What were your thoughts? What's your takeaway from this interview?
So, and Jason, especially you having a background in recording too, you know, I did a lot of dumb stuff when I was a kid, go to concerts and you could hear that ringing and everything's all muffled as the ear's trying to protect what it can from a high intensity over a short period of time.
There was a time in my life when that was a badge of honor. And that's pathetic.
But it's still a lot of people. In our epic headphone debate, Juan, I coughed to the fact that I have never used earplugs at live music, and I'm 40, going to be 41 now, and I won't. Still, I don't like things in my ears. I saw My Bloody Valentine live and couldn't hear for four days after the fact.
Badge of honor.
And actually, just as a quick aside, Ron, thank you so much for joining that debate, because you're one of the most outspoken people that I respect your opinion on the counter to, you know, 3.5 millimeter headphone jacks starting to die on our mobile devices. That was a fun debate to put together with you and Enabong from Board at Work.
He's the best.
But no, it was great. He was smack talking before we even got started. I knew it was going to be good times. I was so excited to have this opportunity. UCLA is pretty close to me, and reaching out to their PR, that this is a conversation that doesn't really get a lot of attention. So Dr. Allison Grimes, she's the director of audiology and a specialist in newborn hearing, so a pediatrics background. And we've got a lot of just survey data out there that is suggesting that teens and younger adults over the last 20 years or so, we've been seeing a marked rise in significant hearing loss at younger ages, especially over the last 10 years. And so Dr. Grimes was very, very forthright in her opinions. And we were very careful not to say that this is conclusion, because 10 years is not a lot of time to study a trend. But the numbers are rising so rapidly that this is a disturbing trend that we want to be taking a look at and starting to study more aggressively. But what do we all know over the last 10 years, we've seen a significant rise in consumer behavior is the rise of the smartphone. Mm-hmm. And so the smartphone as a multimedia platform is radically different. I mean, from the iPod to the smartphone as a multimedia platform is radically different than what I grew up with, you know, a Sony Walkman, where you always had to take breaks. Batteries would die. A cassette tape would need to be flipped over. it was sort of just built into the experience that there would be a lot of stopping points. You weren't just grinding one cassette tape all day with almost no stopping point. So she was amazing to sit down with. It's always a good sign when the interviewee has researched the questions, because some of them aren't necessarily directly in her field. But she took the time to research those questions. We had about a 40-minute conversation. She is on point, very insightful, and she was just lovely to talk to. I like talking to scientists, because you can kind of throw them a few curveballs, but you know, when they make a guess on something, it's way more informed than when I make a guess about something.
Yeah, they redefine the air quotes educated guess.
Exactly.
It's way more educated than most people's educated guess.
It's like, I make a guess, she's making an educated hypothesis.
Yeah. Well, what I found interesting was this idea, like you were talking about duration and the fact that we do, yeah. You know, there have been many times in my life where there were more times in my day with me something, you know, having something on my ears, channeling sound directly into my ears than not. And, you know, that how that duration of, you know, just the fact that these things will, you know, these phones will pump out audio, music, whatever you happen to be listening to.
Inexhaustible. You know, it's
entirely
inexhaustible.
24-hour stream if you really wanted to. And what is the damage that duration of constant audio into your ears can actually do? What are the benefits of making sure that every hour you turn it off for 10 minutes, just unplug your ears, let it kind of recalibrate, and, you know, maybe you want to continue listening again. And I don't know.
Well, it falls into
that.
A lot of the same ergonomic discussions that we have about things like protecting our eyes.
Yeah.
You know, we're just cracking into those consumer discussions about things like maybe having a blue light filter on your display when it starts to get dark, just for your psychological health and your sleeping health. you'll hear regularly, you know, take breaks so that you look at things farther away than the distance of your monitor. If you're going to be using your computer for really long sessions, get up, stretch. I've got a smartwatch that's constantly nagging me. A little nanny pop-ups like, you haven't moved in an hour. And like, shut up, watch, I'm doing stuff. we need to start having some of these conversations with hearing health, because for two reasons, in my opinion, and I feel like Dr. Grimes agrees with me on some of these points, is one, damage done to the ear never really heals. You kind of just acclimate to what your new condition of hearing is.
I've experienced really this directly. Yeah, it's funny because I not to interrupt you, Juan, but I've literally, so it's safe to say I have hearing loss. Like, I will gladly say that. Mm-hmm. The degree of hearing loss that I have, I do not know, because I refuse to be tested, because I figure ignorance is bliss, right? But right. What has happened is that what I've noticed as I've gotten older is that I find myself, like, my wife will say something and I won't be able to process it, but I'll say what? And then when she says it again, it's not that I couldn't hear it the first time. It's that I didn't believe that I heard it. And the second time verifies what I heard was correct, right?
Yeah.
So she'll be halfway through the sentence and then I'll go, oh, right, yeah, we'll go do that, right? And it's a weird thing where, like, I've adapted to, and especially in meetings and at clubs, like when the decibel level of the din gets to a certain degree, like, mm-hmm. I know when I'm checked out versus, and I can't, like, they're like, Jason, we've joked about this. I'm so afraid of going back to South by Southwest because I'm afraid that I'm going to agree to some sort of business deal because I cannot hear who I'm talking to at a party, and I'm just nodding and going, yes, totally.
Yes.
Yeah, because it reaches a certain point, and I literally cannot hear the person standing next to me. Yeah. And at that point, it's just like, okay, I know I can't hear them. I need to get out of this conversation. But like you definitely do. There's a subtle, you know, like you get used to the level of hearing that you have, and then you figure out ways to move around it. And it's really crazy when you think about it.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it's also one of those things where there's just a little bit more stigma around hearing loss. That's an old person problem, or there's something wrong with you. And we don't think twice about people who wear contacts or wear glasses.
Totally.
But, you know, imagine, you know, seeing someone in their 30s with hearing aids. Oh, my gosh. Were they born deaf?
That's the same thing. Like a buddy of mine who was a coworker, you know, he'd say something and I'd say, what? And he'd get mad at me and I'd be like, dude, it's not my fault. I'm sorry. And then he would be like, all right, I'm sorry. And sometimes he'd be like, no, actually it is your fault. You should have wore earplugs.
Yeah. But, it actually is your fault. fault.
Yeah, no, but there definitely is a weird stigma around it where, it's, you know, like I work with someone else who is hard of hearing. I don't know in what case or what capacity. And I see him trying to sit at a certain angle to hear people and to see other people react. Like, we socially don't know how to deal with it very well.
Sure.
Yeah, I have to balance that because I need to be looking at your face in busy environments because I can't tune out background noise at all anymore. But I also need to angle my left ear because, I mean, if you'll notice, I'm super right ear bias for like phone calls and monitoring, like being able to hear you guys and not having my speakers on. And it's worn out my right ear to a higher degree, but I'm just so used to it that I have a hard time switching, which I probably should to balance out the damage. But I also want to leave this ear less damaged. So I'm kind of stuck there. To your point, though, it's one of those things that if we're not having these conversations in a public space free of that kind of judgment or free of that kind of stigma that society puts on it, in that we're seeing hearing degradation in children now, this is going to be a problem for how we diagnose things like attention disorders. There was just recently, I think it was in Philadelphia, and I'm sorry, I probably should have pulled the story up, where some of these problem children in schools from lower economic status families really just needed glasses. They couldn't see the board and they couldn't see their teacher, and they were becoming a problem in class because they weren't really engaged with what was going on. And the same thing starts to happen with something like hearing. You start saying, what? I'm sorry, what did you say? Or you make a face or you nod at an inappropriate time and someone's telling you a terrible story. You know, like those things look like you're being a jerk, but it's actually a physical phenomenon of hearing loss that is altering your behavior. I thought I had attention problems. It turns out I didn't really have attention problems. This is likely due to significant hearing loss for me being I almost swore like really badly for me being a jerk and doing dumb things, going to concerts and going to warehouse parties and raves and stuff and like standing in front of the subwoofers, like that's bad. We don't want to do that. But now on top of this, we're also never giving our ears a break. We're pumping audio into our skulls 24/7, 365. And it also has an impact on younger child behavior. You know, at that most impressionable time, if you're putting headphones on a kid, those are ages where they're really learning social skills, really watching how people interact with each other, developing speech habits. But if you block them off from the rest of the world early in that development because of headphones, then you're actually doing them a disservice. Like it's going to be more difficult for them to catch on to some of those social cues later in life.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it drives me crazy when I see my, you know, nieces or nephews like show up with the white earbuds in and they don't take them out.
Dude.
You know, and it's like, listen, you're in middle school. Like I listened to music when I was in middle school, but I didn't walk around with something in my ear the entire time. We had those really bad foam headphones that you put over your ear, right? But even then, like I didn't. The amount of, I walk around Manhattan and the number of kids with stuff in their ears listening to God knows what, right? And I sound so old while I'm saying this, but like I didn't even do that back then. You know, like my hearing loss is from standing in a warehouse in front of a hardcore band, standing next to the speaker, you know, because we're moshing up front and in front of the guitar amps, right? And it's like, you know, and it's just as bad as being at a rave or being at a hip hop show or driving it directly in your ear via the earbuds. And I think we're gonna see. It's like I joke a lot recently about social media and how we're gonna look back on social media we're gonna look at social media now like we did smoking in the 50s and 60s, and I think it's gonna be the same thing with headphones and earbuds and hearing loss. Is gonna be like, oh, that's a thing people did to themselves and they hurt themselves and now we know better and now we have better technology, but can you believe they did that back then?
Why destroy your eardrums if you can just channel it through bone conduction through your brain directly?
I ask her point blank about bone conduction because I've been a big fan of that technology. For anyone who's rocking Apple EarPod style earbuds that drivers channel audio into your ear, but there's no seal. And I've heard from a lot of people that they like wearing them because they don't block the world around them and they feel more situationally aware. So my counter argument to that has been, well, maybe don't have something that funnels audio directly into the ear canal. Use something like tissue conduction or bone conduction. I've been a big fan of Aftershocks. I think they make some great sport headphones, not the highest audio quality, but if you're telling me that you care about situational awareness, your ears are totally open while you're getting that audio feed. But to a point, the inner ear is still responsible for making sense of those vibrations. So those can still do some duration damage over time. It's just less force is being injected into the ear. So you're probably a bit better off. Also, it's so tactile that when you turn them up super loud, they buzz on your skull. And that's just not very pleasant. Yeah, so you probably have to walk back the intensity more than with, again, the ear pod. For me, my quest has been, how much is your hearing worth to you? How much money do you want to spend on hearing aids earlier in life? And especially if you have kids, joining that conversation too, because I think it's not that ear pods are bad. It's just that I think they train people to have really bad habits for how long they're going to listen and how loud they're going to listen. So because you have to block all the noise out around you, you end up listening significantly louder than you probably need to.
Yeah. Probably so. Fascinating stuff, tangentially related to Android, but maybe more related to smartphones and mobile. But that's
sure,
okay, because that topic fits into the greater topic. Totally. Of the show, and, so.
But Juan, did you get to talk to her about how Bluetooth headphones are superior over the headphone jack? Or
Oh, yeah. She was like, you know what? I'm so glad that the 3.5 millimeter jack is dying. This has been a useless adaptation of consumerism. It's basically just old fuddy-duddies that don't want to buy new stuff. And she was very forthright. Again, just on point.
I like her.
Very savvy discussion. No, we didn't talk about that, unfortunately. But I wanted to ask her about some other technologies. She did have, again, just some concerns over things like noise reduction technologies, which I thought was really interesting because it was an angle on that I hadn't really considered before.
Yeah.
But ultimately, there really wasn't much, in her opinion, that changes from like higher fidelity audio files. That's not really going to make a big difference. Different types of headphone design, probably not going to make a substantial difference to the actual damage being done. But a lot of this really does seem to be more behavioral. So if you've got really great inserted, passive noise reduction capabilities, then you can usually stand to listen for that longer duration. You can usually listen at a lower intensity. That really does seem to be the big trick right now. There are... far off on the horizon, there is the potential that we could discover some kind of amazing stem cell style therapy to help regrow cilia or repair damage to the inner ear. But right now, it's as soon as you have damaged something in there, that damage is permanent. I cannot stress this enough. I've seen some people in the chat saying like, oh, well, you know, your hearing is going to degrade with age anyway. That is absolutely true. How quickly do you want your hearing to degrade? Start using better habits today. You know, you should have been using them yesterday, but you know, today's as good a day to start as any other. And just take some thought on what it is that you're doing to yourself, because you can't walk it back. There is no recovery.
I feel so bad because I'm going to go see Superchunk Saturday and Sunday night, and I'm not wearing earplugs. Sorry. And it's so funny because I've lived so much else of my life in a healthy manner. You know what I mean? Like I didn't drink until my 30s. I didn't, I'm not a drug user, or, even marijuana, all that sort of stuff. Like I'm very clean living, but this is my one vice. It's my one vice.
I get it. Yeah. But it's also, it's so funny because I've gotten so picky about like PA equipment. And so few of the little indie bands that I like to go see are really rocking great gear that when I'm sitting sort of mid house, that I feel like I'm getting a good representation of their music anyway. So at that point, I'm there for the energy of the crowd, and I'm just as satisfied with the energy of the crowd popping in just, CVS brand foam earplugs just to take some of the edge off how bad, overdriven, or distorted that PA equipment is. And same thing, like I always have a pair of inner ear earbuds on me. And we went to go do Easter stuff at the LA Zoo. They have like a little kiddie show and they set up their own little personal like PA equipment. And it's so overdriven. It hurts so bad to listen to. And I'm like trying to cover my daughter's ears and I look like a jerk because I'm wearing headphones while these people are performing. I'm not listening to anything on my headphones, but it's like, I got to take the edge off. This just sounds terrible. So I know you're going to go see a band you love, man, but you know, you go spend $1.50 on some earplugs, and I would be willing to bet good money that it doesn't hamper the experience of really joining that performance live. I bet you walk out of there and your ears will feel so much better, and you won't have suffered any loss of experience.
Can I jump in real quick? I have a suggestion.
What's that?
So I just got these. These are Edemotic earplugs.
I love Eddies. Yeah.
And they don't muffle the sound, because my big problem when I go to shows is that it muffles the sound if you use the foam ones. Mm-hmm. These, though, are supposed to, you know, keep all the frequencies there, just limit them.
Yeah. It's almost like a water filter. It's more of an intensity filter than it is foam, which is just a block, you know, where it's just going to stop sound. And of course, that's going to alter high frequency sound more than low frequency. So foam definitely does get in the way of some of that. But Eddies, I love Eddies. I definitely recommend some Eddies.
Protect your hearing. And Ron, hopefully you can hear us next week on the show.
We'll see.
And he's like, what?
Huh? What? We'll have to do some closed captioning for you, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. And then we'll talk about some actual hardware that we have to review. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. I'm a big fan, a longtime user of LegalZoom myself. It's a fact of life that attorneys are expensive. I don't know if you realize that, but it's true. I think you probably knew that already. You're likely to pay around $300 an hour. $300 an hour. That's just one reason why smart business owners turn to LegalZoom. Over 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom to start their businesses with LLCs and corporation and a whole lot more. Even after your business is set up, LegalZoom is there to help you out. Lease agreements, changing tax laws, contract reviews, all that stuff is part of running your business. But these are the exact things, the exact kinds of legal hurdles that take time and effort away from what you're really trying to do, which is grow your business. That's why LegalZoom created their business legal plan. With it, you get legal advice for your business from vetted independent attorneys and tax professionals available in every state. You'll also receive access to NDAs and more. The best part is you won't get charged by the hour since LegalZoom is not a law firm. Instead, you just pay one low upfront price. Check out LegalZoom's business legal plan at LegalZoom.com now. You're going to get some special savings when you enter promo code AAA in the referral box at checkout. So make sure and remember that part. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. That's LegalZoom.com, and enter promo code AAA for special savings. And we thank LegalZoom for their support. All right. That was all very hardware related news, more or less. But now we've got some hardware reviews. It's time for hardware. I may be a little late to the game on this one, but hey, what can I say? I've been using the Samsung Galaxy S9 for, I don't know, probably 3 weeks now. I made it through the majority of my vacation, which, you know, I was gone for 10 days on that vacation, using the Samsung Galaxy S9 as my kind of daily driver, though I did bring my Pixel 2 XL, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes. You may already guess, but when you're on vacation, you take lots of pictures. I'll get to that in a second. But the Samsung Galaxy S9, just some quick thoughts on this if you haven't already kind of made your decision, because it's been out a little while now. But obviously the design, I feel like, is super familiar at this point. It's probably the ethos of why change something that works, you know, that isn't broken. Thankfully, they did change the fingerprint sensor, and that really is, you know, changes how you integrate with the device, how you operate the device on a daily basis. Now, you may also remember that on the S9 series, Samsung added the dual kind of like face iris unlock cooperative sort of security system. It's kind of complicated. It's not using both at the same time, but it uses one, and if it can't, then it falls back onto the other, which I found to be okay in daily use, but it kind of slow. And so I ended up activating the fingerprint sensor on the back. And instead of like waiting for that system to do things magically, I just do what I'm very used to, which is tapping my finger on the back, and it unlocks pretty quickly. So, you know, I'd say maybe there's some work to be done on the speed of the dual face iris unlock thingy to maybe speed that up. And I like where the fingerprint sensor is now. The stereo speakers, plenty loud. As you may remember, my stereo in my car is broken. So if I want to listen to any podcasts or whatever, I have to do it either with my phone or with one of those earphones, those Bluetooth earphones, which I've been using lately. We'll talk about that later. And so I have to just turn up the speakers at full blast. And on this phone, you get a nice loud sound out of it, which I appreciate anyways. 4 gigs of RAM, Snapdragon 845. So it's got a lot of speed under here. I feel like it runs about as smoothly as you've come to expect from Samsung at this point. This is one of their flagships. And if it didn't run fast and smooth because it's using the latest and greatest processors, it would be kind of strange if that were the case. And thankfully, it runs as expected, right? Also, as expected, the battery life on this device, it has 3,000 milliamp hour. This is the smaller of the two. The Plus has, I think, a 3,400 milliamp hour battery. And I mean, it's fine. It gets you through the day. It's not going to blow, you know, win any awards or blow you out of the water and be like, man, I've never had as good a battery life as I have with the Samsung Galaxy S9. But apparently there's some issues with the Exynos chips in the international versions of this that's really hampering the battery performance on these devices. So if you're getting an international version of this, you might have a different story than I did, but I feel like the battery performance on this with the Snapdragon processor was great. And then finally, the camera, I think, is the big topic. You know, it was certainly what Samsung made a big to-do about. It has, you know, the dynamic kind of mechanical aperture that changes between two settings based on the lighting performance. The first link that I have in the doc, Josh, is kind of some photo and video samples from my vacation to kind of give you a sense of the quality of some of the pictures. And I thought they were fine. You know, the good color. We've come to expect that Samsung has. Now, this is the video, and I don't know.
Ooh,
Google Photos.
Did you get the fireworks? Ooh.
Yeah, if you skip about halfway through, the fireworks start. Let's see. Yeah, there we go. All right, fireworks. I feel like it's looking a little chunky, and that might have something to do with Google Photos. Or maybe it's just that I'm watching it on a bigger screen for the first time, you know? But
well, there's a lot of color data in this right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This light show is amazing at Disney World,
by
the way.
The castle projection is insane. There.
Yeah, it's insanity. Anyways, we watched it two different nights. We loved it. But anyway, so I took a number of photos while we were around, some in challenging light environments. That was obviously a lot of light. This was, I can't remember which ride that was. But
that's Splash Mountain.
Is that Splash Mountain?
Yep, that's the
is Splash Mountain. You're right. And then this was a really nice beach photo that I really liked. What was kind of cool is I took this and then Google auto awesomed it and gave me a photo that ended up looking even better. I forgot to put it in there. But anyways, this is the actual picture from the camera. And I just got to say, like, in my experience taking pictures with this camera, that looks all right. I don't know, like it was fine. But what I quickly realized, because I was carrying around the Pixel 2 XL with me everywhere, is that I do side-by-sides and I really kind of compare them. Had I thought ahead, I would have put some of those in the link and showed those two as well, and I forgot to do that. But my impression with the dynamic HDR that's going on in the Pixel 2 XL and just some of the other bells and whistles, the stabilization of video, more often than not, as the vacation went along, I stopped reaching for the S9 and I continued to reach for the Pixel 2 XL and I was always really happy with what I saw out of it. So keep that in mind. It's not always, you know, it's a great camera, but in my opinion, the Pixel 2 XL camera beats it, and even with the dynamic aperture. Although, slow motion capture is awesome. Check this out. This is a balloon filled with water hitting the ground. Isn't that awesome? I love it.
That's pretty cool.
I love it. It just flattens like a pancake. Brrr. And, you know, just having that super fast. And this is another one. It explodes, so it's cool in a different way. But, boosh. cool creative uses with the super slow-mo. I don't know how often in your daily life you're going to turn it on and record something, but you find reasons to use it because you want to, because the effects are awesome. And then finally, AR emoji. I think that's what Samsung's calling it. And meh. I mean, you use it the first day or two because it's there and you're like, oh, I guess I got to check this thing out. And I did a bunch of stickers and stuff because that's, I guess, what you do. And then I quickly forgot about it. So, the S9, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's a fantastic phone. I don't feel like in any way Samsung really dropped the ball or anything like that. I just think this is the third iteration of this device that's following this kind of design approach. And at this point, I'm kind of like wanting something a little new. You know what I mean? I'm kind of getting bored of the design.
This feels like the final iteration, the ultimate refinement on the Galaxy S6.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It feels like they've continued. That's probably been exactly their plan, right? Like, don't change too many of the other things. Really get it right and keep going. It's a great design to do that with. This design still is very beautiful. And when you look at the phone with the display on, it has that kind of nice infinity edge effect on the side. Apparently that's blinking a lot, looking for my iris, I think.
It's just such a shame that they missed the boat. I mean, look at that chin bezel, though. I don't even understand how you could use a phone like that. I mean, that chin bezel is just so ridiculous. What you need to do is, like, have almost no bezel and then cut into the display to have your webcam up on top, obviously. That's the only way that you can make a phone.
What would you call that, though? That's really strange.
Maybe a bat ears or a unibrow. I don't know, something like that. But this is terrible. I don't even understand how could that even be immersive?
Yeah,
that
it's true.
Humongous bezel.
It's true. That gigantic sliver. That's the biggest sliver I've ever seen.
And I keep having to swallow vomit. I mean, it's just the worst thing that I think has ever happened to smartphones.
Okay, I think Juan is trolling at this point. I think maybe a little bit. Overall, it's a really great phone. Samsung has put out a great phone. I hope that with the Galaxy S10, and I mean it's the 10, so one would imagine that they have plans to kind of go big in a different direction, perhaps. And but I would be welcoming that.
Do we think that there's gonna be something so revolutionary or radical to the glowing rectangle, what lives in our pocket for design? I kind of just want to see consistent pressure on this because I don't know that software has caught up to the insane computing power that now lives in these mobile devices. Like, I'm kind of okay with Samsung just continuing to refine. Maybe like a note at the end of the year has under the screen sensors for fingerprint sensors and stuff like that. I don't know that we need to rock the boat too much with these devices, just kind of fulfilling what demand there is currently. And then waiting till we see what new services really do start to disrupt the current metaphor of using a glowing rectangle touch square get app.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the other side of it too. Like, why do I feel like they have to change things up? If it works and it's still beautiful and it does everything, you know, checks all the boxes and everything, like the need isn't necessarily there. I feel like I've used this phone three, you know, I've reviewed this phone three separate years now.
Oh, you have?
It's so similar, you know? So maybe from a phone reviewer standpoint, I'm bored, but consumers are going to love this phone. And there's many, many reasons to, you know what I mean? It's well done. It's well made. So that's the Galaxy S9. My impressions anyways. So Juan, there's a couple of hardware thingies that you proposed, and one of these actually does run Android, the Echo Box high resolution digital audio player. Tell us a little bit about this. Looks like a flask.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, for all about Android, I'm for a number of stories this week, I'm stretching.
This runs Android adjacent. It fits.
But this is, it is running a very outdated, Marshmallow. But it looks like a little hip flask. It's made out of actual wood. Some durability issues or concerns in that there is a crack forming on the front of mine. I haven't been that rough on it. But beautifully engineered hardware, all focused on delivering the highest possible portable sound quality that you can without having a bunch of like, you know, amps or other USB powered DACs or anything like that, not having another computer in your pocket. So you have a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, obviously, and an optical out. So you can actually connect this to even nicer speakers, speaker solutions. It's all built around really trying to drive home a premium audio experience. If you buy one, you'll get a couple months of Tidal for free, and you can start consuming some of those really high quality audio files from that as a streaming solution. But ultimately, this is one of those things where even though it is running Android, I still would recommend treating it very much like a standalone consumer audio device. It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, but radio management will introduce noise. So whenever Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are on this thing, I can kind of hear that there's a buzz or a hiss or a whine that's being introduced because of that extra electromagnetic interference. Also, the Wi-Fi speeds are pretty slow, so you probably don't want to do a whole bunch of streaming that way anyway. So there are definitely some concerns in using it, but it's one of these things. And again, from Ron, when we had that debate, there is a solution, and there's a solution which takes you away from trying to rely on smartphone manufacturers for providing high-end audio, because not a lot of them do. Samsung took a nice little step up after they bought out Harman and AKG. LG, very surprisingly, that they've continued on with their Saber DACs, the ESS DACs and the V-series phones, which are phenomenal. And outside of that, there aren't a whole lot of players that are really trying to hit a higher tier. The little DAC and the floppy adapter in an iPhone is actually pretty good, but that dongle is very easy to lose. The cabling is not super rugged. It's pretty easy to wreck that. So if we're going to take this away from phones, there are some other solutions that we can take a look at. And now's kind of a fun time to revisit the idea of having a standalone portable audio delivery system, you know, like kind of taking me back to what I loved about iPods. Not necessarily the best data device or Android device, but it gets to the point of streaming really high quality audio and doing an amazing job of powering nicer headphones.
Is there any downside to the fact that it's running an outdated version of Android from your perspective? Well, I mean, it still does the things that it's meant to do well. So
it still does, but this is also why I would highly recommend not using it like you would use an Android device. Right. You know, kind of like when the iPod Touches were really popular, you could use an iPod Touch almost like a radio-less iPhone. Really get into social media services. You could really, you know, share content. It was just like having a teeny tiny tablet. Because it's running such an older build, a much older build of Android, I think the last security patch it got is July of 2016. I would highly recommend not using this to tweet, you know, or having all of your email accounts going through this, or sensitive information, personal information, banking information.
But you could if you wanted to. Like, it's not prohibiting the use of it in that regard, or is it?
No, but it's opening you up, I feel, to unnecessary risk when the point of the gadget is multimedia consumption.
Sure.
That to me does become a bigger and bigger concern, and why I get really cranky about manufacturers who aren't very aggressive about operating system updates and security patches. We're spending too much on these gadgets to not protect user data.
Sure.
This is making a good faith argument that the majority of what you're going to use it for is listening to music. That's why you're buying it. So while you can do all of those things, I wouldn't recommend doing many of them, just because why introduce any unnecessary risk into the equation? Use your phone for all of your messaging, your communications, your multimedia. Then rely on this to really fulfill that on-the-go or portable, high-end, high-quality music listening experience. I think that's the best of both worlds, because then also you get the benefit of not taxing the lower power chipset in this device with a ton of multimedia content or social media content, notifications that are always going to be pinging this battery. You just get to focus on this one aspect of that. And then this will reduce the battery draw of streaming music or streaming audio to your phone. You get to separate those, and you end up with, I think, a best of both worlds solution that way.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Ron, you get your Bluetooth.
I love it.
You do have Bluetooth.
But, hey, I'm getting more and more behind Bluetooth every day that goes by. I think Bluetooth has been serving me well. It had some kinks in the first 10 years, but now smooth sailing.
finally nailing that sweet spot. Only took a decade. But to your point, Ron, this is actually, I think, something that really does support the idea for some people out there. If you're concerned about the phone that you have, like you really want the Pixel, you still want a high quality audio experience. Those were never going to be synonymous. Yeah. The first Pixel had kind of a garbage headphone jack for a device that was as expensive as it was and built by HTC. Super bummed me out. So this, you know, is something that's going to live with you in a very different way and hopefully grow with you in a very different way. You can go through a couple different phones. Audio doesn't cycle that aggressively. Yeah, so it becomes less of a pain point when you have, and you know, I still have my old Fio too. I have a Fio X5 also. I like what these bring to the table. I like that they play well with my car because of stuff like Bluetooth or being able to plug directly into an auxiliary jack. And I like that if I want to spend some time with a mid-ranger or an entry-level phone, I'm not sacrificing the quality of music that I've come to expect. These things fill in the gaps for me, and I can kind of keep these around longer than the processing power or the software would otherwise indicate. I don't feel like that's too much of a hamstrung situation if this isn't up to date immediately, because it wasn't even when I bought it brand new.
Right.
That's fine. It can kind of sit in the background, and I don't have to worry about how much security problems I might have with something like this.
Sure. Awesome stuff. All right. So, and then we actually have something else that's audio related, but also smartphone related. Maybe a little bit more on the tangentially related to smartphones, but mobile nonetheless. Talk about the Go Mic.
Yes, Go Mic Mobile. So, Samsung sent this kit out. So, you know, going with something like the Echo Box, we're talking about consuming multimedia, consuming content. I have been a huge advocate over the last 2 years for getting people out there creating content, soup to nuts, from your mobile devices. I really feel like this is something that people don't fully explore when they're buying $600, $700, $800, $900 phones. What you're carrying around in your pocket is phenomenally capable. One of the things that kind of holds us back, though, is audio. So while we're talking about this gorgeous, look at how crispy this 4K video is, you know, the mics on a Pixel, not super great, also records mono audio, and it's tied to the phone. So you can't get away. If someone's just a little further out in a busy environment, it's hard to hear. So I've got to give massive props to Samsung. This is the Go Mic Mobile receiver. So it's this tiny receiver. I mean, it's way smaller than even a deck of playing cards. This is a two-channel wireless system that can plug in via USB. It's got a converter for if you want to hook it up to a Lightning port, or it also has a USB-C adapter cable. So you can plug it into an Android device. It's just Android devices aren't always very consistent in how they recognize USB audio still. And then it also has a 3.5 millimeter out that you can use to monitor or to feed into something like a camera. So if you want, you can connect this to like a DSLR while you're recording video too. Very easy operation, single push button, and then it connects to a range of accessories. To start, they've got a body pack, which connects to a lavalier mic, one of those little clip-on mics. And they also have a handheld mic if you want something that's a little bit more interview-driven and kind of point the mic, bring it back. A decent range. These accessories aren't as ruggedly built as high-end professional wireless gear like you might see a journalist use out in the field, but it's so much better than anything consumers have gotten their hands on, and the kit is surprisingly affordable. So a dual lavalier setup with a receiver is something like $299, depending on where you shop it, which is unheard of. I mean, we haven't seen anything approach this type of flexibility, customization, sound quality at a consumer accessible price point. And I've just been doing so much from phones, cutting video from family and friends all the way into producing some fairly professional projects entirely on the phone. Not only capturing all the video, recording my voiceover, writing a script, editing 4K video with transitions and titles, graphics and text and chroma keying out backgrounds, all the way to rendering 4K finished files that can go directly to clients. We've gotten to this point now where having a solution like this is necessary. And if anyone's interested in actually trying to improve that work situation, one of the biggest pain points is audio, is trying to capture good audio from your phone. This takes you a huge step forward on both iPhones and Android into improving that situation.
Right on. That's a good improvement. You know, it's funny that you're talking about Samsung and quality, because Megan has some products that she's reviewing, and they're Samsung mics. And she's like, so what can you tell me about Samsung mics? And I don't have any direct interaction with Samsung mics, and I don't know where it came from, but somewhere along the way, I've just always compartmentalized Samsung with not that great. And I don't know where that came from. and I realize it's not a fair assumption to make.
Well, so, I mean, it's about keeping things, perspective. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So, if you've ever held like a Sennheiser Evo lavalier body pack, it's going to feel a lot more rugged than what you get with the Go Mic Mobile. A single Evo is going to cost 2.5 times what a stereo receiver is going to cost from Samsung. So obviously we're having very different discussions on build quality, on durability, weatherproofing, things like that. But that being said, that Evo is going to make you jump through a number of hoops to get it connected and working great with a phone. You're going to have more gear in the chain to get it to work in a mobile fashion. Samsung is the first company to really take this idea seriously for a mobile first or a mobile journalism style production rig. So again, they're first. I'm sure another company might come out and do it better, but this is substantially ahead of the curve from anything else that I've seen from competing manufacturers. And to your point, if I have a bit of mic snobbery, I have a huge love for Neumann microphones, AKG, the C414, ULS is my all-time favorite studio grade mic. That's a $1,000 microphone. It's a very different conversation when we're talking about like USB kit. And that's a niche that I think Samsung has joined really well. Just sort of a consumer starter mic, something that's going to compete against a Blue Yeti, something that's more portable, like a Go Mic Mobile or a Meteor mic. Those types of things I think do really well. This is exciting because I don't think I've seen anything like it from anyone. The closest that we've seen is the $200 lavalier that you can get for iPhones from Sennheiser. Has like a little Apogee converter on it. So it's just one lightning connector cable, and it only works on iPhones, and it's really great. But for $100 more, you could go wireless. Could go wireless, and you could have two channels of audio coming in that you can mix or separate out into individual tracks. And that's a lot more flexible, and that's a lot handier than a $200 cabled lav that only connects to an iPhone.
Yeah, right. Cool stuff. All right, so that's Samsung, not Samsung. Although we'll talk about Samsung in the emails.
But I have used it with a Samsung.
Oh, okay. Samsung. Yeah, very similar.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. They work well together. All right, so speaking of Samsung, so we've got a bunch of emails. I went through and I picked out just a ton of them. And they're all really great emails. And we've got 15 minutes maybe to get through them. So we're going to do some sort of a lightning round. See if we can just pummel some answers to your questions and your comments, starting with Samsung. Ron, go.
Yes, Will wrote in, and Will also got a Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus. And Will says, I absolutely love the phone, the design, the screen, etc., but I hate the Samsung experience. And that's the problem with the Samsung. This is what we've been saying. The phones are great. The experience, not so much. So Will says, what do you recommend to make my phone more like stock Android? And by the way, I would have bought the Pixel 2 XL, but my carrier, T-Mobile, does not carry it, and I couldn't afford to buy an unlocked phone. Thanks and love the show. Doesn't Google have the payment plan for the Pixel 2, or is that gone?
No, they do have a payment plan.
They do. They have
a payment plan, and they have a trade-in plan as well.
Yeah, so there are other options than just buying stock, but you might want to look into that. But for the Galaxy S9 Plus, funny you should write in, because just a few weeks ago, our good friends over at the XDA developers.com, XDA-developers.com, the XDA forums, posted about the fact that the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus can now boot official TWRP, which is the Team Win Recovery Project, and that is the key to being able to mod your phone. You want to install TWRP or TWRP so that you can recover your ROM in case anything goes wrong. And now once the kernel was released for the Galaxy S9, the modders got to it. They're able to make TWRP work. And so then now you can go ahead and you can flash Android stock ROM or whatever ROM you might want to onto your phone. But like with any modding situation, you're probably voiding your warranty. Be very careful. Only do it if you're comfortable with doing this stuff. It's not for the faint of heart. But it is possible. So you could wipe out that Samsung stuff and put on stock Android. So.
Yeah, you could do the ROM approach, which is what Ron's talking about. Yeah. You could, you know, maybe peel it back a little bit and just go with like Nova or Action Launcher and put a different launcher on
there. Yeah, that's what I know. I don't even give phones a fair shot anymore. It's like I'm going to use it for a day and go, I've got my setup on Nova. I like that.
Right.
Just kind of
it's funny because I went super hardcore with saying just flash the ROM and go really deep. That's a very good point. Install Nova Launcher and try that first. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, you can go that route. I mean, that's like I want stock Android on my phone. It's not I want to replace the launcher so it is like stock Android or whatever. That's the next level stuff, and it's totally possible. Or you can just put a different launcher on there, and there's different ways to. I think Substratum, we've talked about on the show, has a way that without root that allows you to customize some of the things. Maybe there's a way with that you can change the look of the notification shade so that it more reflects the straight Google Pixel experience, whatever. There's a number of different ways, but I'm probably guessing start with the launcher, and if that's not enough, then flash. But do a lot of homework before you flash. Flash. Oh. Brian says, question for me. Says, can these earbuds, and I'm assuming Brian is talking about the Liberty, the Zolo Liberty Plus wireless earphones that I reviewed a couple of weeks ago on the show. Brian says, can these earbuds be used independently? The answer is yes. You can use them independently. So, I mean, and if by independently, do you mean use one at a time and it monos down to a single earphone? The answer is yes. I do it all the time. When I'm driving, because I don't have a stereo in my car, I will have one earphone in with my podcast playing, and it works beautifully. Also says, did you do any testing on the OnePlus 5T? No, I did not, but the OnePlus 5T does support Bluetooth 5. So the Bluetooth 5 capabilities of the Liberty Plus and the Bluetooth 5 capabilities of the OnePlus 5T tells me that there probably isn't a whole lot to worry about there. I would guess that it would work. Another question, was there any audio delay? And I'm assuming he means like if you're watching a video and listening through a wireless earphone, is there a perceivable delay between the audio you're hearing and the video that you're seeing? And I specifically played videos a number of times to see if I could detect it. If it was there, it was so incredibly small. And I definitely noticed it on different Bluetooth earphones more than this. So I don't know if it's the Bluetooth 5 aspect that's improving that. I know that Bluetooth 5 has a faster delivery in audio content. I don't know if that's what the reason is, but I felt like it was pretty in sync. I'm trying to see if there's any other questions. I think that's really about it. He says, currently I'm pretty happy with the Jam Ultra earbuds and I'm pretty happy with them. Still, I have occasional drops in signal and audio delay. I hope the Bluetooth 5 will help. Personally, I feel like the Liberty Plus checks those boxes as far as that's concerned. I still have not encountered a single drop off in using them, and I've used them a lot since even the
review. That's impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, especially considering that they're in earbuds, because even on some of my nicer Bluetooth kit, I'll crouch in a position just to like tie my shoes, and then apparently my butt is enough to disrupt the signal, which sucks. I've been trying to lose weight, man. So I'm really hopeful that we see that step there, because that is one of the pain points for me in an all wireless environment out of convenience, is it's not very convenient when the audio starts cutting out on you.
Oh yeah, it's a pain, and audio cutouts are the primary thing, one of the primary things that makes me not want to use Bluetooth over wired, because I know wired's just going to be a straight connection direct from the phone to my ear. Liberty Plus by Zolo are the first earphones where I've been like, you know what, these are dependable enough and sound good enough and work great for most things that I want them to work for and carry a lot of charge with a case, that I'd be willing to do Bluetooth. I don't tell my wife, but I got it for her for her birthday. What's that?
I was going to say, and not coming in at like $700 for the
exactly. Yeah. All right, Ron, you got the next one.
Next email, Captain Anthony Trombley, United States Air Force. Thank you for your service. Said, I read an article last week that had me thinking about the role of a lot of people, the role a lot of people seem to think about progressive web apps will have in the future of mobile and desktop computing. While I can see their usefulness over native apps, I find myself wondering why I can't just use my Chrome browser instead of a progressive web app. I think I speak for a decent number of users when I say that I like the idea of minimal apps on my devices. I have staple apps that I use regularly, and for the rest, I just open up my browser and go to Facebook or Delta or whatever. Same goes for my laptop. Chrome does a lot of the work outside of Office and some streaming apps. So I was wondering if any of you had any insight as to what merit PWAs have over my current usage and why people think they are the future. And this is tough because I think the concept of PWAs and native apps and the web, you know, and just a browser, it gets kind of lost for a lot of people. But progressive web apps are something that I definitely think are the future. And I definitely think they are, you know, they're going to be where we eventually lead to once we get rid of our obsession with app stores and all that sort of stuff. But because basically a progressive web app is in your browser. You're already doing it. Using Facebook on your web is using Facebook as just a web app. The progressive web app approach is a way of coding, leveraging what's available in the services in Chrome and in other browsers to optimize for a mobile experience. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, my wife, she's gotten rid of a lot of apps from her phone and she goes to Facebook in a browser. She goes to her bank in a browser. It's just using their web apps, which are just as good as a lot of the native apps. But for some reason, our consumer marketplace is obsessed with native apps and all that sort of thing. When really, you know, what has been done with Chrome by Google and by the HTML5, you know, contingency by the folks at Mozilla, by all these great people working on the web, is to make the web capable of doing as much, if not more, than what native apps can do. Mm-hmm. So that's my kind of rant on progressive web apps.
I knew you'd have something to say on that one, Ron.
So guys, this is something that I've been kind of teasing a video on that I want to try and finish up. So I'm just going to wreck my video and put it out here. Do you think we could make a transition to a Chrome OS phone?
I feel like we've heard about the potential of something like a Chrome OS phone. So almost like a Pixelbook phone or whatever.
Yeah. We could still run Android apps in Chrome OS. We probably wouldn't lose too much there, but it would be a more browser first focused experience. Cause just like what this, Captain Trombley is talking about, you know, you just changed the metaphor from having touch square get Facebook to open bookmark get Facebook. And then because of the requirements that Google's put on Chrome OS, wouldn't it also be a touch more likely that these manufacturers would probably be faster on updating their devices too? Because Chrome OS is pretty aggressively updated.
It is.
Directly from the Googles.
Yeah. I mean, I use the Pixelbook and I've used Android apps on it. I don't use Android apps on it nearly as much as I thought I might want to, because sometimes you put them on there and they just don't, it's just not the same. You know what I mean? So in order for that to work, I almost feel like we would have to be living in a world where progressive web apps is the norm and the app paradigm that we're so used to living in right now, the actual app install sort of paradigm.
It is a big metaphor change. You know? It totally is.
It's a huge metaphor change. And it's funny because, Josh, I just put a link in the doc. I just quickly found a great article that I read a couple of months ago and I dug it back up by a developer advocate from Samsung. And he wrote an article on Medium called Six Myths of Progressive Web Apps. And it actually breaks down a lot of the, you know, the obstacles around the concept of progressive web apps and what it is, whether it's browser specific or it's offline only or, you know, stuff like that. So if you're interested in progressive web apps, search for Six Myths of Progressive Web Apps and Samsung, and you'll find it in Google. It really dives into it. But I think it's fascinating because it absolutely is the future. It's the way everything needs to go. But we need to shake this paradigm that Apple has baked into our head and then Google followed suit with.
Yeah.
Well, and isn't it funny because that's what Apple started with? They just started with it on a phone that only had a 2G radio.
Yep, that's true.
Do you remember the iPhone presentation was that, you know, Steve Jobs said you'll do everything in the Safari browser. Like it was that was the vision. That was the original vision. But then they did the financial modeling on the store and realized what they and also because the doing apps on the C level, like hardcore native apps, allowed you to do more with the phone. And now browser technology has caught up to the point where you can do that. You can access the Wi-Fi. You can access notifications. You can access all these things that previously were baked deep within the OS that you needed to do, you know, app level deep coding to do. So,
All right. Moving on to the next one. Bob writes in to say, I really like your show. Can't wait for every new episode to appear in my Pocket Cast Unplayed list. There's one thing that kills me every time I hear it, though. When you talk about screen aspect ratios, you always say X by Y. Ratios are expressed by saying X to Y. It really makes me cringe every time I hear 18 by 9. It should be 18 to 9, unless you're talking about dimensions. I hope you take this as constructive criticism and not just the unhinged ravings of a lunatic, Bob. Well,
first of all, Bob, as much as I respect your chutzpah there in trying to correct language, I am triggered by your example of being 18 to 9 in that you should be reducing your fractions. That should be two to one. So, Bob, I mean, you know, are we talking math or are we talking language here?
It is two, though. It's not by. It's the X. That's what gets us.
Yep. It is. Absolutely.
I'm totally guilty of that. And I know exactly where you're coming from, Bob. And I will endeavor to be better.
Thank you, Bob, for sending that in. Ron, you got the next one.
We got one more from Domnall who says regarding vertical video, it was interesting to see Ron and Flo arguing about this issue last week. I was on a social media training course for the British Army recently. Thank you for your service, Domnall. And I was devoted to producing video content. I was horrified to find they're training people to film everything in the vertical or better still the square format. Like Ron said, I've always been taught to use the horizontal, but ever since I did that course for work purposes, at least I've been using the square format camera on my LG G6. The thinking behind this is that users are accessing their content in portrait format. And it is annoying for them to have to turn their phones 90 degrees to view our videos. So it seems that Ron and I are wrong. And that's the thing, Domnall. We're not wrong. They're wrong. Everybody else out there is wrong. Video is meant to be horizontal, and I refuse to accept otherwise. So.
No, I'm with you, Ron. Every time you shoot video vertically, God kills an orphan girl's puppy. So I don't understand why all these people seem to hate orphan puppies. That just makes me sad that they're this adamant about it. But no, the thing that bothers me is there the minor inconvenience in asking someone to turn their phone landscape to interact with a much higher quality, much better framed piece of content pales in comparison to the number of people that I also know in my circles of family and friends who are likely watching content on laptops, desktops, TVs. You know, like when I shoot video of my daughter, I make an effort because I know that my mom's probably going to watch from her laptop or her TV now that she's got a Chromecast.
Yep.
Why would I give her a teeny little vertical strip of my daughter with very little surrounding context of what my daughter's doing running around? Because, you know, 2-year-old, she's a little Tasmanian devil, and following in vertical is terrible for capturing that kind of a moment when I know that she's going to watch it on a laptop or a TV. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
The Instagrams and the Snapchats and the Facebook Lives of the world are ruining a generation in terms of video production and receiving. Now, I get that they're watching video on their phones and that's the natural way to hold it. And I've argued with other people about this, but it's not hard to rotate it 90 degrees. People are just lazy. And actually, I saw someone on Twitter responded to this conversation with me and Flo and showed a picture of him watching this show in horizontal format while holding the phone portrait mode and using the split screen double app function to have a browser underneath the video to watch the video while using his phone. Genius. There you go. So. Yeah,
and also Oreo gave us picture in picture for a bunch of these services too. That's you know, true, like, yeah. I feel like there's the solution has been found and it's not always do what Snapchat tells you to do. Yes. The only time I go vertical is Periscope. Periscope, I'll shoot vertical because of how people type comments, that seems kind of awkward and how it takes you out of the video. But even then, lately, I've been streaming Periscope from my home setup. So I would much rather show people this view of me than some crappy selfie camera view of me. So now even my Periscopes have switched over into landscape.
Yep.
I think you just use the orientation, either horizontal or vertical, that matches the service that you're using.
Yep.
And that's my take on it. So you can't stop the Snapchats and the Instagrams from the fact that they look better in vertical. And if that's where you're putting your stuff, record it in vertical, even though it feels wrong for me. I lived a life of fighting with my Laserdisc player against the people that didn't understand why the black bars were on the top of the bottom of the screen and going, no, you don't get it.
No.
And now that's normal. Now it's normal. Everybody has widescreen TVs, so it's not a matter of like, right. But there's black bars on the screen. I want it to fill the full screen. So I get it. But, you know, there you go. All right. We didn't get to all the emails. Hey, we ran out of time. That's okay. We'll save them for next week and maybe do another one of these roundups. But it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right. Last week's poll, I was out. I gotta pull this up here. Okay, so Live Roads, Hot Look, and San Diego Inc. were the were the apps to be voted on. And what one? How do we see here? View activity.
You gotta.
No, that's not it. You gotta
change your user. Go to 20. Click on the 211 votes.
No, you know what? Live Roads, 45%. So Live Roads is the winner, 45%.
Wow.
Who is Live Roads?
That was me.
Right on. Congratulations, Ron.
When I checked before the show, it was in second place with San Diego Inc. being in first. So, wow, that's crazy.
Live Roads, first place, 45% is what I'm seeing right now. San Diego Inc., second place, 44%.
Yep.
So there were some last-minute votes placed. And then third place, Hot Look.
Can you guess who had Hot Look?
I know who had Hot Look.
Yeah, so with those results, Flo and her Hot Look didn't really do very well. Jason, you missed 2 weeks, so you're in the basement, my friend.
Oh,
you're
20,
you've got 27 points. You were in first place at one point. I just want to note that. So now you're in your last place with 27 points. Flo's got 30 points in third place. I'm in second with 34 points. And the guests, thanks to Tony last week at San Diego Inc., are still in first place with 36 points. But I'm climbing. So, Juan, you are representing the leaders. But Jason, you missed last week, so I think that means you go first.
All right. And I'm realizing I didn't set up the poll, so I'm just scrambling to do it right now just so that I'm not later. Okay. I've gotten far enough on that. I think I can smash it all together as we go along. But I've got a lot of demonstration duty right now because you guys are all off on Skype.
Yeah.
So we'll figure it out. Once again, thank you to Burke. Because Burke's throwing me some lifelines. I think Burke took pity on the fact that I've been out the last couple of weeks and haven't won. Because this is pretty interesting technology. It's called Phono Paper. And apparently, this is something that completely flew over my radar. This app is a way to basically take sound and turn it into a visual representation that the app can then scan either on a screen or on paper or whatever and convert that into sound again. Which is an interesting way. So this right now it's in scan mode, right? And I could go in here and I could switch this around and I'll say new code. And then, so let's see here. Testing 1, 2, 3. Hello, I'm Jason Howell. I'm recording. It's showing the little waveform of how I'm talking. It's basically doing a simplified waveform that you would be used to seeing in audio. And then you end up with this, a kind of crazy looking smash up of visual stuff that doesn't look like anything at all. If I could print this out, I would, but I can't. So instead, I have to rely on something that I have printed out. First I'm going to rely on Burke's example. So let me pull this up. It's on my screen. I have to do something a little strange. Thankfully, it's Pixelbook, so I can flip this around like it's a piece of paper. Okay, so I'll put this on the screen. Do you see that, Josh? Let's see here. All right, so this is what Burke sent me. And I'll see if I can. I got to turn up the volume here on my phone. Sorry. Okay, we'll see if this actually works.
Let's see. I have to frame it perfectly. Is it going to work? Is it, hey, where's the audio? Hold on. Oh. Okay. All right. So now it's starting to kick in. So it has to like detect the borders, right? Ah, the mic's getting in the way. Ah, the setup's really weird. Hold on. Okay. So that layout says this is a personal message for Jason Howell. Then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to take the beginning of All About Android with the music. And then I discovered that this doesn't work so well for music. So let's see. Did you hear that, by the way? I don't know if it was loud enough for the mic.
Yeah, some of it was coming through.
So that's what it sounds like with music. Not very good, but then you'll hear flow. Check this out. Hello, hello, and welcome. So anyways,
that's so weird.
It's very strange. And I'm probably not doing a great job of demonstrating it because it's hard to like get it in the camera view and get it far enough that it can actually detect the top and bottom borders of what's printed out. But it basically allows you to take like a small waveform, whatever you want. I recorded that audio, right? I could then print that out or send that image to somebody. And I don't know why you'd want to do this. It's just cool that you can. It's called phono paper. And it's just kind of fun to play around with and see what kind of effects you get. And hey, you know, people making music, here's a new effect that you haven't heard before. You can come up with some cool effects to rope into your music, perhaps, if anything else. But it's just kind of a neat way to play around with printed audio, which is a concept that I'm not very used to hearing about. So it's called Phono Paper, and it's a lot of fun. It's free. Check it out. Burke says you got to scrub it, which is what you're doing. You're scrubbing the audio with your phone. So thank you, Burke, for that. And I hope you guys enjoy that app. All right. What's next? Who goes next? Would it be Juan or Ron?
It'd be Juan because right. I won or because right. I came closest to winning. So, yeah.
All right, Juan. I will show off your app while you talk about it.
Right on. So first of all, I'm really stoked that you brought an audio app because you let me geek out on so much audio. I thought, well, I should bring an audio app. And again, I have been a big proponent of getting your work done from mobile devices, content creation from mobile devices. So my app for the arena this week, Audio Evolution Mobile Studio. Now, this is a full-fledged recording solution. We've seen a number of apps where you can kind of record, you know, some notes or some memos, and then you can kind of trim them up a little bit. This is a full multi-track recording solution, which also has some of the best support that I've ever seen for USB hardware. So if your phone doesn't support USB audio or there's some other weird, funky compatibility issues or you're running just an older device, I think a Lollipop on up. I could be wrong there. They should have it in their notes. They also have created their own custom USB driver that you can utilize hardware to plug into. So when you plug in a USB audio device, they'll ask you, do you want to use Android's USB audio processing or do you want to use our custom solution? And more often than not, the custom solution has worked better. But so you can have multiple tracks of audio. There's support for MIDI sequencing. You can have drum machines built in, other virtual instruments. You can have looped playback if you're trying to edit music. But for me, I've also found it to be a huge benefit for spoken word audio recording. So, you know, like using the Go Mic Mobile that I showed off in the hardware segment, you plug that into this app right here and you have a full studio grade solution in your pocket ready to go. You want to do some podcasting on the fly? This is so much easier than what we used to have to do with portable recorders and getting the audio files out. Again, there's no file management anymore. You don't have to record on like a Zoom or some kind of memo recorder. You can record directly to the device that's also going to do all of the editing, all of the trimming, all of your music, and then use that device with the internet connection to upload that directly to whatever service you use for your finished product. So this thing has been a huge help for me in getting a lot of work done quickly on the go in the field. And it's just an insane collection of plugins and benefits, sample rates. It supports Wave, MP3, FLAC, AUG. You can have an unlimited number of tracks if your phone is powerful enough for it. Fade, virtual instruments, and then plugins per channel too. So it's pretty incredible what you can accomplish when you're trying to get this stuff done. And this is usually something that, you know, we would only see sort of an iPhone version of. We don't have as many of these full-fledged video and audio editing solutions on Android. This is the best one that I've found for actually getting some polished work done.
Yeah, it's not bad. And I'm learning this as you're talking about it. So I'm like, how do I find an instrument? Oh, there it is. There's the instrument. How do I get the piano roll? Oh, there's a piano roll. I mean, something deep like this on a smartphone, it's going to take you a little bit of time to kind of understand the, really get your feet underneath you and understand the flow of it and everything like that. But this has everything that you would need in a full-fledged kind of music production environment.
Well, and even from you just poking around, I mean, I saw what menus you were going through and stuff. If you have any experience with a DAW, a desktop-grade audio editing piece of software, the learning curve on this is not very steep. If you don't have a lot of experience, this is going to be an intimidating app to pick up just totally blind. But from the last time that I was joining the App Arena, I mean, this goes hand-in-hand with me using something like PowerDirector. You can finish 4K professional looking 4K video on the device that actually shot the video. So I used this. I was at my sister's graduation and I recorded the audio of the choir singing her alma mater. And so I used this to actually clean up the audio a little bit from the mics on my LG G6. I was using the G6 at the time. Used that as the bed in PowerDirector for all of the video that I was shooting. And before the graduation ceremony was done, I already had a 4K video of my sister's graduation uploaded to the cloud for all of my family and friends. You know, like, those are the kinds of things that are so much more accessible now and so much easier to do. And I don't think people fully realize, like, they have an opinion, oh, well, I use iMovie on my Mac or something like that. Like, you don't even need to do that. You don't need to offload files anymore if you're really trying to get something cut in the moment. There's an immediacy there, which is pretty wonderful, considering that this is only, it's a $7 app on the Google Play Store. It's not, a painful piece of software to pick up.
Yeah, $7. There's a trial, so you can check it out and play around with it a little bit. You're going to need some time to poke through here, you know, for sure. It looks like it's a really powerful sequencer, you know. Digital audio workstation. Well, you can record audio straight in through the microphone or do the MIDI instruments or a combination of both. It's got a click track. It's got all that stuff.
And more than that, it will allow you to go from mics, input from the headphone jack, virtual instruments, MIDI, and USB. So I've connected this to, like handy recorders, like a Zoom. So you can use 4-track from a Zoom. I've used it with Focusrite. You can plug a Focusrite directly into your phone. This takes us a huge step up from where we were in terms of audio. Like I said, so many apps like video. Oh, you can trim your video. Well, I want to stick videos together. Oh, well, that's too hard.
Right. Like,
it's not, though. These things are crazy power. Your phones are crazy powerful. And now it's the same thing with audio. Like, I've got a memo recorder and I can trim the head and tail. Well, that's not good enough. I want more.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool stuff. Audio Evolution Mobile Studio trial, also $6.99 for the full version. There's a bunch of, when you first load it, there's a bunch of sound fonts that you can download, a big pack that'll bring in all of the sound instruments and stuff. And then I think you can even shop for more, or if you happen to, you know, collect sound font files on your own, you can just draw. I'm sure you could transfer those into the file system and have.
Yeah, I've got a ton of old Acid and Fruity Loop files that did just fine.
Yep. Yeah. Awesome stuff. Right on. Audio Evolution Mobile Studio. Okay. And finally, Ron, yours is the third app of today. What is it?
Yeah, so this one kind of comes in from the vault, so to speak. This app actually hasn't been updated in a while, but it still works and it's still pretty cool. The name is a bit of a misnomer. It's called Hacker's Keyboard, and that might scare you potentially, but it's not really a hacker's keyboard or a keyboard for hacking or whatnot. But what it is it's a keyboard replacement that replaces your, whether you're using Gboard or SwiftKey or whatever, or the default keyboard. Although, is Gboard now the default keyboard?
I believe so. Well, I mean, on Pixel, it's the pre-installed default.
But it replaces your keyboard with actually a full virtual QWERTY desktop keyboard with control, shift, alt, et cetera, and that sort of thing. Now, you might wonder, why do I need that? Why is that important? If you, first off, if you are a using a tablet and looking to really write, with, on that tablet, the same way you would write with a laptop, this is a great option for it. But also, if you're using your phone as a way to SSH or remote desktop into a desktop computer, oftentimes you can't do the same things you can with the regular phone app keyboard. So you want to be able to access control or shift or whatnot. And Hacker's Keyboard lets you do that. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. It doesn't have any the same swipe kind of capabilities or anything like that. Jason, if you go landscape mode.
Okay. Landscape, type. There we go. Oh, okay.
There we go. So now you've got control, you've got escape, you've got alt. If you're ever, if you're remote logging into a Windows machine and you need to hit control alt delete in order to log in, right? That's an option. That's something that you need to do.
I see. It holds them down.
Right, exactly. So it comes in handy if you're that kind of user. So Hacker's Keyboard, it just works, and it does a very specific thing very well, in that it gives you a standard, kind of QWERTY style keyboard with all the extra keys, arrow keys, which is huge, especially for writers or for editors. I find working in spreadsheets and stuff like that is very difficult on phones, but this keyboard made it a lot easier. It's as difficult or easy to install a keyboard replacement as any other ones. You download it, you enable it in your settings, you give it the permissions, and then you activate it like Jason did at the beginning of this demo, and there you go. You got a full keyboard. Great for tablets. Good if you have to access into remote desktops with your phone. Hacker's Keyboard, it's free in the Google Play Store. Pretty cool. So there it is.
If you are a hacker, don't be caught with any other keyboard on your phone. Oh, yeah. There's a
type cookie.
There's function keys, all sorts of things.
Yeah. And you can change the languages and all that fun stuff. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Right on. Awesome. So that is.
That's really good. The arrows got a huge response in the chat. And I was just thinking, takes me back to like the Touch Pro 2. Like, I kind of miss those hardware keyboard controls.
Yeah. Too bad they aren't clicky, Ron.
Clicky is the best kind. So
there needs to be a clicky mode where every time you hit it, you feel like you're on a mechanical keyboard.
What was the BlackBerry that had that? You had to like press into the screen and it had that click on it. It was like, I don't remember what it was. It was a good idea, but kind of a terrible execution. But this is all about Android, so I probably shouldn't reminisce too much.
It's all good. We talk about all types of phones. tangentially, of course. Okay, so episode 363 means that you go to twit.to. Sorry, I had the wrong link in the doc. Twit.to. No, that's all right. twit.to/AAApoll363 twit.to/AAApoll363 Hopefully that works for you. You can place your favorite vote, or your vote for your favorite app. Is it phone or paper? Your favorite vote. This could be your favorite vote of all time. Phone or paper, Audio Evolution Mobile Studio, or Hacker's Keyboard. Place your vote. We'll check in on it next week. Josh, do you have a preference?
What are you going to vote for, Josh?
He might not be logged in to vote. It's possible.
Well, what would you vote for if you could, Josh?
Oh, man.
We're putting you on the spot.
These are good ones this time.
Yeah, I know. You better pick wisely.
Let's see.
Your future at this company depends on it.
Yeah, so if your future at this company depends on it, you probably want a really good audio editing solution.
Right. Yeah, that would be good. I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated by photo paper, though.
Yes.
Oh, it's the cult of Burke is talking right there.
Yeah. No, Burke's, he's got a grasp on everybody. Everybody is underneath Burke's thumb, basically, in this place. It's true. Okay, so place your vote. Maybe you like phono paper, or maybe you like the other ones. We'll check in on it next week. That's it. We made it. Almost made it in time. Juan, always awesome getting you on, man. We really appreciate you taking time out of your night to join us on this show. Thank you, man.
Yeah, definitely, man. I love coming to join you guys. This is always a fun conversation. So anytime you have me back, we can also not talk about audio in the future, but you know I'll geek out on it hardcore if you let me. So.
It's all good. I love it. I love it. Where do you want people to find everything that you're working on? What's the one place you want to go to?
SomeGadgetGuy.com is sort of my little home base for a lot of the projects I'm working on. I'm still doing the Pocket Now podcast and every week Newegg Now. So Newegg.com. We'll have a show this Thursday talking about some cool AMD hardware.
Right on. That's going to be a lot of fun because that show covers a lot of territory. It's not just mobile. It's not just Android.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, it was nice to like kind of broaden my horizons again. Getting to play some games for a living is super nice.
Yep.
So that certainly doesn't suck.
Right on. Cool. Well, great job with that. And we'll have you back soon, Juan. Thank you.
Definitely. I gotta say, I made this comment when I went onto Juan's YouTube channel for the headphone debate. Juan has the crispest video of any of our guests. His camera. So look at that. It's amazing. It's how it puts my camera to shame. I want him to come to my house and set my stuff up so I can look as good as he does.
Dude, do you know how fun a field trip that would be? I would love to do that. Heck yeah, I'm totally down. Let's set that up.
All right, awesome. Maybe. I gotta save
we
up
could,
to
we could do like tech video vlogger makeover, you know, home edition or something like that. I'm all about that. Let's do that.
I got to save up for the budget, but once I can afford the equipment, then maybe we'll do that. So
right on.
So good. Anyway, you can follow me over on Twitter and Instagram at RonXO. That's where I post my usual nonsense, working on fun, cool stuff that I'll share here very soon. That's my tease, my usual tease. But Jason, that project I was telling you about is coming along nicely.
Nice. I can't wait. I can't wait. I know stuff that you don't know, and you will know it sometime soon, and it's really exciting. Awesome stuff, Ron. Good to be with you again. Now, what about you, the Mac and Josh? Is it the Mac and Josh or Mac and Josh?
It's actually the Mac and Josh, because that's what I had. That's why I wound up getting on all the social media. So you can follow me on Twitter, of course, there. Instagram, I've kind of been posting more stuff there lately, so you can follow me on. It's also the Mac and Josh. Now I'm thinking, after the discussion about the portrait and landscape video, I'm thinking maybe I should just drive everyone crazy and do my Instagram story in landscape.
Ooh, do it!
I will help you with that. Yeah,
Juan's gonna help you with that. He's gonna help Ron with his video setup. Juan's going to be busy.
I'm a giver. Awesome. I like helping people.
it's apparent. You can find me at jasonhowell.net, on Twitter at jasonhowell, yellowgoldmusic.com. I promise you that CD's shipping any day now. I'm pretty certain. I expected it to ship out during vacation, but I think it got tied up with a few things. But it's going out any day. So if you supported the Kickstarter, thank you. You're going to be getting the CD any day now. And then soon after that, I'm going to open it up, probably give it like a month of exclusivity to the Kickstarter backers because they're awesome and they made it happen, and then open it up. And if you really want to listen to it, you can. That'll be at yellowgoldmusic.com. But that is it for this show. Thank you so much once again for joining us. 347-SHOW-AAA if you want to leave us a voicemail in your own voice and be on the show. AAA at twit.tv for emails. Find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We have our Android apps list at twit.to/Android apps. Every app we've covered in the arena is there. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can come watch the show live, tickets at twit.tv, or watch it live on the web every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. And I think that's about it. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Of course, we do it every episode at this point. We're going to be sick of Oreos by the time the new version is named. This week, we have a limited edition flavor, and I think both we do and Ron, you have them as well, right?
I do. Now,
this could have been a flavor that was sent in or brought by Mateo, perhaps. That could be why I have two. No, actually, you know what? I think I ordered on Amazon, and I didn't realize I ordered from two different sellers the same one because I ordered so many at one time. I think that's what this one is. So it's cookie butter Oreo.
So it's important to read the description on the bottom because I also have it. Jason, you were kind enough to send me a package, which I appreciate. And here it says, for everyone who can see it at home, graham flavored cookie with cookie butter.
Okay.
Flavor cream.
What is a cookie
artificially
butter?
Flavored.
What is so a cookie butter?
So it's not
butter?
So much cookie butter, but cookie butter flavored cream.
Does this taste like the Biscoff cookies?
It might. We'll find out.
What?
So, Juan, okay. I'm sorry. You're going to have to watch us eat now. So.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Just avoid the mics for me and my misophonia, and I'll appreciate it.
So, Jason, give it a smell. Before you do that, smell it, because it definitely has a graham cracker smell.
Yeah. It almost smells like the filling is the same flavor as the cookie, almost.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, I'm turning the microphone.
I'm diving in.
Now that's a pro. I love it.
I had that once in a while go, so that audio listeners, know that.
It just tastes like graham cracker Oreo. Like the cookie butter feeling didn't really change. I feel like the cookie being a graham cracker cookie overwhelmed the flavor of the cookie butter cream. Jason, do you agree?
I would agree. It's a lot of the same flavor, which is not bad. I would say if you like a graham cracker cookie, the cream tastes like a graham cracker cookie, but in cream form.
So is the cream kind of like a what is that called? I don't know how you pronounce it. I've only seen it written the speculus or speculose or that cookie butter stuff that you can get.
Oh, boy, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Jason, take another one out and open it up and taste the cream by itself. That's what I'm doing right now.
All right. So we're going to dissect this, are we?
Yeah.
We're going to get to the bottom of this.
I think this one deserves a dissection. You see, it's kind of crunchy. It's got some bits in it.
Mm-hmm. It does have bits in it.
Okay.
It's not a bad flavor. Yet again, it's one of those flavors that like I could probably only eat one in a sitting. And
now, what's interesting is if you eat the cookie independent of the cream, it does give you a different taste. It tastes like straight up graham crackers. So the cream is influencing the taste.
Yeah, I think. It's this is all about loving graham crackers.
Yeah, listen, Juan. I take eating seriously.
I am with you on dissecting food. So the sandwich cookies haven't really been a part of my repertoire. So I feel like I'm at a wine tasting, and I'm just not educated enough to join the conversation.
I'll just go ahead and say, Juan, we've tasted a lot of these sandwich cookies in the past year, and at this point, they're all blending together into one giant cookie
cream. I
would
imagine, yeah.
So. Juan, if you open up your web browser and you at home can do the same and go to twit.to/Oreo, you can see the full list of every flavor we've tasted and our ratings.
Thank you, Patrick Delahanty in chat for putting the link to make it easy for you to click it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And go there right
That's
now.
That's hilarious. So
in order to wrap this up, we have to give it a number. I feel like so many of them end up in the 6 to 9 territory. It's okay. 6.5, 6.5. That's what I'm giving it.
I love reading these ratings, like double stuff, no rating. Oreo thins, either a good thing or a bad thing is the rating.
Oreo
thins, coconut cream, would not buy again. Birthday cake, B.
We found our legs about 10 Oreos into it. It took about a month and a half.
We had to find our scoring pattern, but I love all the contextual information.
How happy this makes me that I'm going to have to go through these and check them out.
So, Jason, you give this a 6.5?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I'm going to go a little higher.
Okay.
I'm going to go 7.5.
Okay.
I could see myself eating a lot of these.
I could see myself giving it a 7, but I'm going to stay with 6.5 because I could probably only eat one of these in a sitting.
It's
and
a good
that.
Tune. Can't really dance to it, though.
Yeah,
these would probably be really good with coffee though. Cookie cream or cookie butter Oreo. Here you go, random person.
And I just want to say this does not sound like they taste like Biscoff cookies at all. Biscoff cookies are their own thing. They're totally different. They're amazing.
No, thank you. I'm not going to do a coffee at this point. I've made it this far. It's going to keep me up all night. Enjoy them. Josh, Alex, and everyone else in the studio that's going to eat them now that we've let go of them.